Hello, and welcome to Charity Chat. I'm your host, Rachel Conroy. This week, I sat down with Phil Kerry, CEO at New Horizon Youth Centre, to discuss salaries in the charity sector. This week's episode has a slightly different approach to some of our other chats, as Phil wouldn't consider himself an expert in this area, but is very open about his opinions on the topic. Phil and myself talk candidly about the subject, but it should be stated to the listeners that these are very much the views of us as individuals. So here is Phil. Hi there, everyone. I'm very happy today to be joined by Phil Kerry, CEO at New Horizon Youth Centre, to discuss salaries in the charity sector. How are you today, Phil?
I'm good, thank you. Looking forward to the conversation.
Brilliant. Yeah, me too. For the listeners, it's a topic that I've been wanting to do an episode on for a while. So I'm hoping that we can have a good discussion point. But before we go into the crux of it, Phil, would you mind just giving the listener a bit of information on your background and how this led you to your current role as CEO at New Horizon Youth Centre?
Yeah, so I'm Phil. I started life as a maths teacher of all things, actually. That kind of classic, I was good at maths and ended up doing a degree in it and then ended up becoming a teacher. But early in my career, I was a VSO volunteer and I ended up spending 2 years in Eritrea. And it was formative life experience in many ways. But one of the things it got me interested in was the charity sector and what goes on out of school. Pursued a career in the youth sector. And ultimately, that's led me to the place I currently run, New Horizon Youth Centre, a youth homelessness charity and day centre in London. And we're going to be talking about money and the kind of value of things today. Obviously, I see the very sharp end of kind of society not getting some of these things right.
Yeah, brilliant. I think it's a good position for you to be in to kind of talk about this topic in a bit more detail, Phil. So first off, why is the topic of fair salaries in the charity sector important to you?
Well, as we've rehearsed already, Rachel, it's probably important to say up front, I am not an expert on this topic by any means. What I am is a dedicated worker of the charity sector. I think it's an incredible sector. I feel very proud to work in it, and I think it's got a huge potential, as it does, to change society. What I also see is that we have some problems in the sector, and one of those is our perceived value by others, and indeed what we pay ourselves. And you can see the knock-on effect that that's happening currently in the sector about people's ability to stay on in jobs, particularly when you've got a cost of living crisis. Also affects people's ability to join the sector, because probably more than ever we're weighing up the value of roles, and recruitment consultants will tell me this all the time. The most important thing is kind of what people is paid at the moment. But probably most of all, why I did this was I just hit more and more people are talking about this behind the scenes and no one's making a noise about it. And so a few weeks ago, I decided, as I often do, to write a post on LinkedIn about it. And it got quite a big response. And it made me see, actually, there's a number of us thinking this and there aren't clear solutions. So what I hope to do then, as I hope to do now, is just start a bit of a conversation.
Yeah, great. For the listeners, it was that post that actually sparked this conversation as well. I noticed Phil posting it on LinkedIn, and it definitely caught my eye. And I think what you've touched on there around the value, Phil, is really important. And you talk about you being at the pointy end in what you deliver at New Horizon Youth Centre. Do you see it particularly impacting those at a service delivery end? Is it more in your administrative staff, or do you see it's kind of across the board at the moment?
In terms of staff pay, I think it's across the board. It's obviously that the more managerial post, the more you're paid. So it's probably less of an issue, but comparative to other posts in other sectors, of course, the same things apply. I mean, at a kind of more basic level, I spend a lot of my time at a place, New Horizon, thinking about kind of what young people are paid, the sort of minimum wage bit of society. And it's interesting, there's been a lot of work on living wage and a lot of comments on the post I did about living wage. And that is the basic. I mean, it's called the living wage for a reason, because that is the bare minimum you need to live. I think as a sector, we need to get that's great as a starting point, but we need to sort of move past that now into what is aspirational salaries for the sector to attract the kind of talent we want to work on society's biggest problems.
Yeah, and to your talent point, you talked about those behind the scenes conversations. You know, I've been having them with colleagues and, you know, other contacts in the sector. I think as well, there's something going on behind, well, those behind the conversations, sorry, have kind of led me and a few people we've spoken to talking about the kind of diversity and inclusion of people that come into the sector. And actually, a lot of people that are coming in now at a junior level need a support network behind them in order to even get those entry-level jobs. Is that something that's reflected in kind of your conversations and what you've been seeing as well, Phil?
So when I joined the sector about 20 years ago, it was all talking about internships at the time, about typically white middle-class kids were the only people who could afford to do internships, although a lot of the sector space in London, certainly not all of it. You either had to be from the area. I think where we are as a society now, particularly with the cost of living crisis, is that is just the normality for everybody. There are questions about, can you afford to join the sector? And quite rightly, the sector is looking at itself and saying, we are not diverse enough. And actually, if we do want to make it more diverse, one of the ways we absolutely have to do to address that is to get salaries up so that we are competitive with all other sectors. Because quite rightly, people are making decisions based on pay.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you're right. I've been in the sector 12 years now, and there's been a lot of talk about inclusion and diversity and, you know, diversity of talent, thought, everything. But it is still very similar people from similar backgrounds who come in. And I think part of that is because if you, like you said, you're entry level, you live in London, which a lot of the jobs are based, you do need a support network around you sometimes to get a job here. And that's something that probably needs to change quite significantly. This is a big question and we probably won't get to the answer, but why do you think salaries tend to be lower in the charity sector?
There's probably three ways of thinking about this. So the first is the historical. I wouldn't claim to be a professor of charity history, but my general sense is that if you think about the origins of charity, they've typically come from the wealthy sort of Victorian or whatever the kind of era was, where the men sat on estates and the women had nothing to do and would typically go out and give alms or sort of volunteer their time. And that was obviously brilliant at the time. It's great that it did that. And that sort of voluntary element of the sector is still really important, has lived on. Of course, the sector has moved on massively from that. There are big established organisations running whole bits of society now, and quite rightly they need clear management, safeguarding mechanisms, and you need paid people to be able to do that. And I think the public perception of some of that hasn't caught up, that actually the sector aren't just volunteers. You still get that even in 2023. Oh, do you just volunteer? Well, no, of course I don't, and I couldn't possibly afford to do this for free, nor could none of my staff or indeed anyone who works for a charity. So that the kind of history is important in all of this, because I think that's got to the present day, which is how, call it, the public or the other sectors view the charity sector. And there's different elements to this, but I do think there is still particularly from our right-wing press, if we're honest, a view that charities should be paid not very much money. And there is outcry about chief executives of large, complex, multi-million, if not billion or pound organisations being paid six-figure salaries. I'm often thinking, I can't believe they pay so little to run places like Save the Children, but it is criticised immensely. And, you know, some of that comes from, and again, about how we do this, but some charities, we make a big play of things like the pound promise at Comic Relief, all your money goes to the front line, we don't waste any. Well, we do have admin costs and we do pay people behind the scenes to run charities because we have to, because that's how you make organisations effective. And we need to kind of turn that narrative around. I think some of it is probably then just transitioning onto ourselves, is our relationship with the other sectors and particularly the public sector. And the way that a lot of charities have scaled is through government contract and public sector commissioning. And quite rightly, that's a source of scale. Our relationship with the public sector is an important one. But in doing so, there has become a bit of a race to the bottom in terms of commissioning prices. We're seen as the cheaper alternative to doing it themselves. We've happily filled that void as a sector. And the kind of third element to it, I think, is ourselves. And we need to look past this. So we have to take responsibility for the situation that we have also created. And, you know, as a chief executive of an organization, I would put myself responsible for this too. I heard recently about something called a Moloch trap. I don't know if you've ever come across Moloch, but it's an old medieval deity. And in those times, people would sacrifice their family to win. It was kind of in the field of battle. They would sacrifice what was close to them for the sake of winning. And it's now used as a metaphor for individual game over sort of collective, what is good. The kind of one that they sometimes use as an example. Audience of people in a rock concert all sitting down, the front row stand up because they want a slightly better view than everybody else, which means that the next row have to stand up, which suddenly finds everyone is standing up. It's in no one's interest for anyone to be standing up. They've paid to sit down, but because of people's individual action, it forces people to do it. Another Moloch example I would give is Boris Johnson and Brexit. Boris Johnson famously wrote two positions on Brexit. He chose the one, I believe, that made him look the best. Going against David Cameron, he probably knew Brexit wasn't good for society, but it would help him become prime minister. Now, I say all of these because I think pay in the charity sector is a Moloch trap. We try and win bids. We try and look competitive for funders. We try and do the things that helps our organisation succeed, but in doing so, makes a collective race to the bottom on price. And actually, we need to think about how we stop some of that behaviour that is individually good for organisations or fundraising teams, commissioners, and actually moves the sector up. Now, how you do that, get out of that trap, is a complex one. And certainly on my post, I didn't find any easy answers.
No, thanks, Phil. I think that answer was absolutely amazing. I think, like you said, is we're here exploring, we're not here with all the answers. It's about starting the conversation and really pushing it forward as well. And I think that public perception and the way the media represents the sector as a whole is something that really interests me as well. And you know, you rightly pointed out that particularly the right-wing press in this country will focus on what they deem high salaries in the charity sector. But for me, it's completely oxymoronic, because they will then also complain and write sensationalist headlines if they feel charities are mismanaged or if donors' funds aren't spent correctly. So there definitely seems to be a position where they, as the right-wing press tends to do, where they tend to conflict. It's a conflicting message. They don't want people to be paid what they see as too much, but equally they want charities to be run in a way that is kind of servicing the donors and isn't going to be negligent. However, if you don't pay people correctly, or if people are overworked, then that ultimately can lead to gaps and lead to things going wrong within the sector as well.
True. Yeah. And the public perception bit of it is kind of, I think, is an interesting part. You know, when you, I'm sure you get this, if you say I work for a charity, the most common response bar none is, that must be so rewarding. And I always think that's kind of an interesting response, because if I had a load of lawyers here this morning, and when they tell me they're lawyers, I don't just say, oh, I bet you get paid loads of money. It was people kind of view it as sort of, it's almost like taking pity on the sector. And actually, I think this is part of the problem. It's not just about pay, it's about charity's role in society. And actually the word charity, recognizing that represents a spectrum of organizations that now do a range of things within this country. Some are clearly essential, and they're actually replicating bits of public services. Some are essential because they're not replicating bits of public services, they're actually filling in quite fundamental gaps. And some are probably nice to haves. I think pay probably also needs to reflect some of that about what we value most as well. There was an interesting point, I think it came from Deborah Alcott-Tyler, who, you know, is quite a spokesperson for the sector, passed on in that comment, was about sort of market failure. And charities, particularly essential services, operate in market areas of market failure. And by sort of definition almost, there isn't a market there to support it. So you're trying to carve out interest and funding in a space where there hasn't previously been any interest or funding. And that obviously tells you a little bit about why the money isn't there to kind of get salaries up, and that you've got to keep things down and efficient and need volunteers to subsidise costs and all the rest of it. So I think it is important that, as well as or instead of just addressing the pay part of things, the sector does more to educate everybody else about the role we play in society. And I think people would be amazed sometimes if they think about all the things. It might be someone who's driving their local bus, looking after their nan in a care home, helping their uncle who's become homeless, teaching their children in school. A lot of these functions now are fulfilled by charities. And if we suddenly pulled it away overnight, I think people would find their lives collectively much more difficult.
Yeah, I could not agree more, Phil. I was having a similar conversation with someone the other day about the number of times that someone in the British public will unknowingly interact potentially with a service, as you said, that at some point in that journey is charity funded or part charity funded in some way as well. And I think you touched on it a little bit there, but in terms of the kind of perceptions outside of the sector, I think language is really important. You know, we still sometimes still referred to as the third sector. Like, what does that mean? Like, it automatically tiers the charity sector as the kind of third most needed sector.
With private sector being first, and exactly. We wonder why as a society we value the incessant chasing of money above the service of others.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. We've touched on it a bit in terms of those conversations you've had behind closed doors, but it would be interesting to me, Phil, what reactions you tend to get if and when you talk about charity sector pay with people outside of the sector.
Well, as we've touched on this already, some people are amazed that you do get paid or don't really understand how charities are financed. You tend to get this kind of, oh, that's interesting, or sometimes people say to me, oh, you're doing the Lord's work, aren't you, kind of thing. So, but I think it is trying to educate people that we are paid, or, you know, not all charities are paid as well. That's the other thing. I think it's important to recognize within this there is a huge spectrum, and that indeed that there are some very large charities that actually pay well and probably more than other things. There's a lot in the press at the moment about Labour and private schools, and Eton is of course a charity. People forget that as well. So you talk about the kind of role of charity in society. Probably a charity has produced more future prime ministers or previous prime ministers than any other school. So yeah, that just comes back to some of that perception and educating people.
Yeah, I think one thing that I always find interesting is in the kind of charity commission reports, and the fact that charities have to put how many people are on over 60k on their books. And I think that has been flat for a number of years. That hasn't even taken into account inflation. And I read something separate about how much you need to earn in London to be quote unquote happy. And it's not even at that threshold. Now, I'm not saying that study is right or wrong, but there is still, in terms of how we have to report against ourselves for the government and wider society, we're still put at this benchmark that other sectors aren't put against either.
Yeah, and I mean, just the criticism of pay in those sorts of brackets that would take place when in the private sector, that's what people are getting as bonuses sometimes for doing work that is certainly not more societally valuable, but it certainly isn't any more difficult. It's just a different set of skills. Certainly my perception of my colleagues is a very talented bunch of people. I never walk into meeting rooms, as I often do with businesses and public sector people, and think, oh, well, we're paid less because we're less talented. It's absolutely not the case. It's about the pursuit of the work and how society is valuing it.
Yeah, definitely. And as we said, it's going to be a hard one to solve on a 30-minute podcast, but hopefully we've kind of we'll try our best on a Friday afternoon to get people thinking. And I guess you have kind of touched on it, and I think, like we said, this is very much a conversation that needs to be spurred on. But what else do you think needs to happen in order for us to rethink salaries across the sector at large?
So I think it's probably a mix of, as with a lot of these systemic problems, it's a bit top down, bottom up, it's a bit in, and it's a bit what happens out. If you go back to the Moloch trap and the example of the people in the concert hall who've all ended up standing up, even though no one wants to be standing up, but how do you get everybody to sit down? You've got two potential ways of doing that. One is you stop the concert, you make a public sector announcement and say, everybody now needs to sit down, there's no point in standing up, and everyone would follow. Or you need a few brave individuals to say, actually, this is stupid, I'm just going to sit down. And for a bit of the concert, I'm not going to be able to see, but hopefully someone else will sit down, and one by one, people follow until eventually everyone then does sit down again. So if you think about that as the kind of metaphor, some of it is about, okay, well, how do we've got a charity commission. How do we get people like the Charity Commission, who typically hasn't or historically hasn't been very protective of the sector, get bodies like that, the press, the media, whoever it is, to start doing some of that value, changing perception, saying, actually, if we want this sector to exist and thrive and solve society's problems, how do we help them have the resources and the people that they need? So that's your kind of top-down bit. I think from a bottom-up point of view, and this is hard, right, because we're all in competitive, particularly at the moment, difficult funding environment, but we do need brave leaders to say, actually, this isn't okay. I am going to start edging the dial up. And if enough people start edging the dial, you can't go, and I've explained this to my staff previously, don't mind repeating it here, when we did a pay review earlier in the year, we can't go overnight and just add 10 grand to everyone's salaries. That would probably break the organization, because you've got to take the funders and everyone else on a journey. But it doesn't mean you can't get there over time. So we do need people to start saying, actually, I am going to push the dial up. I am going to raise pay. I'm going to be confident about that and tell people about that and educate funders and harangue commissioners. Because if we can all do a bit of that, then over time, we can start to push it closer to the public sector or the private sector. I think it's easy to moan about other people, but some of the solutions, or indeed quite a lot of them, do come from within.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think there's probably as well, whilst a lot of charities will talk politics in terms of like campaigning on behalf of their beneficiaries, I think sometimes charities are scared to be seen as being too political. But at the moment, the charity sector, and as the cost of living crisis worsens, is plugging a gap where potentially the public sector isn't doing as much as well. So I think a lot of us need to be braver about being loud about what we're doing and how we're kind of filling that kind of gap currently being presented in society as well.
All the things that charities are absolutely brilliant at, it's our core skill set, isn't it? About advocacy, being brave, challenging the orthodoxy. We just need to think of this as one of our issues.
Yeah, exactly. And that will ultimately help your beneficiaries, because you will have staff who feel better valued, who have a better retention rate, because I think retention is not something that is discussed as much either in the sector, and that can be very hard. And like retention rates can be very high and people leave quickly because they can't sustain things as well. So yeah, I think we need to think about how we can talk about ourselves more, which is still part of that work, like you said, of talking about and benefiting our beneficiaries too.
Yeah.
Was there anything else you'd like to add today, Phil, that we haven't managed to cover?
No, just that, I was open to talking to people about this. I said to you earlier, I think that a couple of people mentioned trying to put on some conversation around this. So let's keep the conversation going. And to any of my staff listening, look forward to having this played back to me in March when we come to do the next pay review.
Well, as your, for your staff, it's not just a Phil Perry issue. It is a sector-wide issue that we need to work on together as well.
No, I mean, I've told them about this. They know it's important. And we are having conversations about this. I say that in jest, but I think it goes back to that. Someone's got to start putting their head above the parapet on this and just saying it's not right. So let's collectively make it better. Hopefully I might spur on one or two more people to do the same.
Yeah, definitely. And our listeners can keep an eye out for those discussions and events that should be hopefully coming soon as well, Phil. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Big thank you to Phil for being so open with us. It is clear that if salaries in the sector are ever going to change, there needs to be a paradigm shift in a number of areas. It is likely to need individual pressures from within the sector, as well as a systemic change in both public opinions and funder attitudes. We must not forget that the charity sector would not exist without the impeccable commitment of millions of volunteers that we are so fortunate to have in the UK. Whilst these volunteers enter the sector with altruistic intent, as cost of living continues to rise, charities also need to ensure they are rewarding their volunteers where they can. The fear of a sensationalist headline feels like a factor in holding individuals and organisations back from putting their heads above the parapet. However, established rules, such as charities having to declare the number of employees who earn over £60,000, could be fueling the notion that there should be a ceiling on the amount that someone should earn when working for a charity. Combined with the fact that, to my knowledge, this 60,000 figure hasn't changed in the last decade, suggests that it is a rather arbitrary figure and not reflective of today's society. As stated at the top of this episode, both Phil and myself shared a lot of our personal opinions through the course of the discussion, but I would like to leave you with the thought that if society is expecting charities not just to support, but to solve some of the biggest challenges we are all facing, shouldn't we rethink a salary structure that reflects this? So thank you for listening to Charity Chat. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. You can find us on Twitter or X or LinkedIn to share your thoughts, or email us on charitychatpodcast@gmail.com. Please do also like and subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode, and share with any colleagues or friends who may be interested. It's just left for me to say thank you to Magda Askamit for our beautiful website. Check it out at charitychat.org.uk. And a big thank you to Forrester Falls for playing throughout the show and for playing as happening. I've been your host, Rachel Conway. Thank you again for listening.